Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That, folks, was the voice of Brian Brown, who created the Brown Briefly. Together, we, the Briefleys, strive with dogged determination to keep Brian's creative flame alive by bringing you every week another episode of what we hope is intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy. And we always strive to follow Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less. So today, let me introduce the Briefleys, as we always do. Zooming in from his home up above KVI Beach is, hang on a minute, I got to find him here. Here it is. Historian extraordinaire, skipper of the Vachon and president of Vachon's Fantastic Heritage Museum, party animal and our own globetrotting guardian of the galaxy, Mr. Bruce Hallman. And he is back from his southern assignment.
Thanks. Yeah, I think we need to rework our intros.
Yeah. Well, I've been thinking about that for a while because some of them get a bit wordy, don't they? Yeah, so for sure.
They do. We're competing with Click and Clack for the exit.
For the Tappet Brothers. I love it. So, hey, joining us in the studio today right here is Mr. Kevin Jones. He is the voice of Indivisible Vachon, the Vachon Climate Action Group, in addition to chairing the Equity and Social Justice Inclusion Committee of the Community Council. He's our tireless defender of democracy who strives to create a livable planet overseen by a government we can all appreciate or at least tolerate. Good morning, Kevin.
Hey, good morning here. And I'm sitting in the co-pilot seat, I think. Yeah, I'm just looking out on the table. There's like, do not touch and other, warning signs. So if I mess up.
And don't say these seven words right here that are printed.
Okay, yeah, okay.
For sure.
I'm counting
on
you.
All right. And we have also someone who was a temporary fill-in for Bruce while he was off to the Southern Hemisphere. But we liked her so much, we keep inviting her back. So, good morning, Amy. And let's see. Let me get your... hang on. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Something is wrong here.
The big board is big board.
Try this. Try that.
How about now?
There we go.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. Yeah.
I keep threatening to rewrite my bio.
Well, you need to. You absolutely need to, because it's really important that we get this right, In fact... Where is your bio?
Yeah, well, and I want to have some of the, I've got some of those funny experiences, like Craig the shoe salesman, and mine feels so like official, and so, we have some weird stuff in there.
So you want to ad-lib it. Ad-lib it this morning.
So Amy comes to you from Vachon Island, a graduate of VHS in 95 via Southern California, where once she drove out to East Los Angeles and was in a warehouse being trained about how to sell credit card systems to convenience stores. And they just turned me loose. They did a big sales, rah-rah, 3 minutes kind of deal. And then they just turned us loose from the warehouse to walk through the streets of East LA to gas stations and convenience stores sell credit card processing systems in the 90s. I lasted a day.
Yeah, well, that's, now there you go. See, we're definitely going to redo your bio, Amy, that's for sure.
Yep. Credit card saleswoman.
I love it. And of course, folks, that is Amy Dreher. She is currently the executive director of our own wonderful Chamber of Commerce here on the island and the main mover and shaker for the Strawberry Festival, which is coming up here. Well, let's see. I have it 115 days. But who's counting?
That's fast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course, mine is the voice of Truman O'Brien. I am a retired Boeing 737 captain and flight instructor, recently re-elected Vachon Airport Commissioner. I'm actually a board member here, Voice of Vachon, and a fellow two-type flyer with my partner, Craig Bellis. And Craig is off actually earning a living today. He works as a mediator, arbitrator, and he has got a big case that he is working today. In fact, this week, he said he's 8 to 5 pretty much every day, except a few days, it's actually noon until 9. if you can imagine.
Busy times.
Busy, busy.
Mediators are necessary in their world these days.
And you know what? This guy, I think this guy is pretty darn good at it, if you ask me. I think he's pretty well qualified for the job. But so I always look at today in history. So I got a few. This was one I did not know. 1917, the Stanley Cup final was held right here in Seattle at the Seattle Ice Arena. And the Seattle Metropolitans beat the Montreal Canadiens 9-1 for a 3-1 series victory and was the very first U.S. team to win the Stanley Cup.
Wow.
Ooh-hoo.
Did you know? I did not know that.
Deep hockey history.
Did you know that, Bruce, you being the historian of the group?
I actually did. You know, they made a little bit of a deal of it when the Kraken, you know, when Seattle finally got another, you know, ice hockey sort of franchise, you know, about almost 100 years later.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Isn't
so
that
pretty
amazing?
Interesting?
It is amazing. Okay, and this day in 1945, allies led by the U.S. Marine Corps secured the island of Iwo Jima from the Imperial Japanese Army. That's after 18,000 Japanese and about 6,000 Americans were killed, if you can imagine. And by the way, this is that famous photograph of raising the flag. That is also the memorial that's at the U.S. Marine Memorial Circle in Arlington, which is just down the across the Theodore Roosevelt Bridge from Washington, D.C. Pretty amazing, that whole thing. Mm-hmm. The whole story. And those poor guys, you know, they had to go on a tour and everything, and they actually weren't very well treated, from what I understand. It's just too bad. Okay, let's see. 1953. Well, this is an important one. Excuse me. Sorry. Dr. Jonas Salk announces that he has successfully tested a vaccine to prevent polio, and clinical trials will begin next year.
And look where it's led us now.
Indeed. Isn't that something? Some of the stuff that's gone. What's the Surgeon General or whatever in Florida? What is the story with that guy? Oh, my gosh. I'll tell you.
Certain job qualifications just, or I don't know, I'm just confused.
Yeah, it's just. Well,
Truman, you're of the age, and maybe you too, Craig. When that Salk vaccine came out, they lined us up at schools.
They sure did.
Gave us shots or little cubes of sugar with a drop of, and everybody took them. And it's interesting to me, sort of cultural phenomenon that from 1953-54 to 2020 with the pandemic, attitudes about vaccines could have changed so much.
Dramatically. Yeah, it's just amazing to me. I mean, we had no qualms whatsoever. And I'm trying to remember now, Bruce, I don't remember the sugar cube. I mean, I remember getting vaccinated for smallpox. I mean, we got the little scratch on the shoulder. But did you guys do that?
Sugar cubes bring up other thoughts for me. I'm not sure about the sugar cube vaccine thing.
Well, they put a little drop of the vaccine on a sugar cube.
Everyone. It's a good absorption.
It was pink, as I remember. Hmm. Yep. So maybe I did do the sugar cube.
Yeah, that's the way I got it.
Yeah, I must have. I must have.
Well, I have to say that I just got my pneumonia vaccine shot just yesterday. So I'm feeling RSV'd, COVID'd, pneumonia'd, and I'm feeling pretty ready to see the world.
See the world, huh? So is the arm sore today then?
You know, it's just a bit, not terribly. Yeah.
The last one I got, boy, really caused some pain. I don't know, for some reason. Yeah. I guess, I don't know what the deal was.
It varies, you know, but, you know, small price in my book to pay.
Indeed. All right. So on this date, I'm not going to tell you the year, but something significant happened. And that was, do you recognize this?
Yeah.
The Colonel Bogey March. That was the theme song.
Is it when the movie came out?
It is exactly when the movie came out. And this is, of course, The Bridge Over the River Kwai, which is a fabulous movie, by the way. So anyone want to guess? Bruce, you don't get to guess, you being the historian. That's not fair. Anybody else want to guess on the year that came out?
Movie came out. Is it like 73?
Not even close.
I'm going to have to go 78 then.
Not even close. All right, Bruce. Bruce, do you know?
Earlier?
1958.
Oh, 58. Yeah, wrong river, I guess. I
was... Yeah, isn't that something? Yeah, 1958.
And, wow, and held up.
Yeah, or are you kidding? And Alec Guinness won for Best Actor in the play, or in the movie. And by the way, I have actually seen the remains of that bridge.
Wow.
It comes from now Miramar. It used to be Burma to Thailand. And when I was in Thailand, I took a tour out to the, quote, bridge over the River Kwai. Now, it's kind of interesting. It's actually a fictional story about the construction of this bridge. But it's about a guy named Lieutenant Colonel Philip Toosey, a British lieutenant colonel. He was dedicated to his men. And in fact, when the movie came out, the folks were a little bit upset about it because the movie kind of implied that he was collaborating with the Japanese to get this stuff built, and that he did indeed stand up for his men. In fact, he was supposed to be repatriated back home, and he refused to go.
Wow.
Because he wouldn't leave his men. And he did really wonderful things for all of the prisoners of war, but he also did sabotage the bridge multiple times. And unlike in the movie where they blow up the bridge in the last, it was actually, there were two bridges. There was a wood one and a steel one, and they were actually blown up by aircraft later in the war. But anyway, thought it was kind of interesting, that whole bit. The last thing that happened on this date was in 2018 when porn star Stormy Daniels claimed that she had an affair with Donald Trump in an interview on CBS's 60 Minutes, and was, of course, later threatened to keep quiet, and you know the whole story about that now.
Apparently started a cash flow, which is going to become quite evident to the American public here in another few weeks.
Yeah, April 15th, I believe.
Tax day, yeah. Stay tuned. Taxes and Trump trial.
Wow.
The fun never ends.
Isn't that amazing? I'll tell you, to live in the age that we're living in, oh my gosh. All right, so let's look at, by the way, today is the Truman Show. For you folks who don't know what the Truman Show is, it means that we don't have a guest today. And so all these characters say, all right, Truman, it's up to you. You got to come up with something. So here I am, struggling away. Mm-hmm. So you guys feel free to jump in and bail me out when I get stuck.
That's the caveat, right?
That is the caveat.
Okay, just wanted to check with you on that.
That is it, exactly. I'm not sure that I have enough material there. Yes, Bruce?
If you really want to get the significance of the Truman Show, watch the movie The Truman Show.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, wherein Truman thinks he lives outside the VOV studio, but in fact he does not.
No.
Intrigued.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, when I went to see that movie, and I've only met maybe one or two other people in my whole life named Truman. And so anytime I hear Truman, they're talking to me, right?
Sure.
And so watching the movie, every time they said Truman, I would go, beep, beep, what? Oh, gosh, it was bad. All right, so let's look at local news here. First, hey, did you guys read about the firefighter who rescued the dog off the cliff? Was that something?
Mm-hmm. Ooh, right here in the front
page. Oh, there
page
it is,
the
right on the front page.
Yeah, there it is. Those firefighters do it all.
Isn't that the coolest thing, though? I mean, I just thought at the time, well, that's a wonderful story for Vashon, and occasionally you'll get one where they pluck them off the cliffs over on the Pacific coast by helicopter and all kinds of stuff.
But, well, I was thinking, on the way in that where's the drone rescue thing might be really interesting to start up here on Vashon for those aerial rescues.
That might be, it might take quite a drone to pick up a firefighter and a dog, Well, I guess
only
could
chihuahuas
pick up a dog.
Are eligible.
You start small.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I love that. Chihuahuas.
Yeah, cats and trees, chihuahuas.
There you go. I love it.
The other thing, I don't know if they had to draw straws for that job, to rescue the dog, because I would bet that almost every volunteer firefighter on Vashon is like, yeah.
I could do that.
Rope me up. Send me down.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, but then you got to have somebody that can interact with the dog because you don't want him to get bit.
Frightened dog.
Yeah. Okay, the other thing that was in the paper was King County Parks has acquired more land to bolster the parks on the island. And my question here is for you, what do you guys think about all of this converting all the private land to public, either through the land trust, King County Parks, Vashon Park District, and so forth. What do you guys think about that? How do you feel about it?
I see two sides of the coin. I see both sides of the coin. There's the huge heart part of me that swells, understanding that we're preserving this, you know, in posterity, in this beautiful land, and our air and the water and the spaces that we are going to be able to enjoy, you know, hopefully for many years into the future. But also it, you know, sort of enforces the necessariness, I think, of having a little more density uptown to get housing.
There you go.
Right. So it's to me, the push me pull you, right, you know, is preserving these spaces is so important. And yet equally important is diversifying our island and keeping it vibrant, right, and allowing people to live here.
And of course, you know, we have there's the population that wants us to revert back to our 1950s selves. You know, it's just not, obviously not going to happen. But yeah, I agree. Yeah, Kevin?
Yeah, I'm also into the, you know, this is really a land use question,
yeah,
right?
It is.
You know, the interesting thing when I moved to Vashon about 30 years ago, it was, we only have a certain amount of water in the aquifer, so we're not going to be building any more significant housing. And of course, things change, right? Appliances become more water efficient, makes room for more people. So do we cut down more trees in order to get more people on the island? Well, I just heard that I think somebody was attacked by a cougar in California. That
it happens.
Killed. Wow. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Killed. Yeah. So, you know, that happens when territory starts being taken away from the wildlife. Yeah. So it's, you know, a big trade-off, but in my mind, equitable, seeking to, how do we have a fair land use policy that accommodates our growing human population while trying to do everything we can to preserve the natural world around us.
Exactly.
And, so I'm a fan of that acquisition myself.
Yeah, and the other thing that comes up, of course, is we are always desperate for affordable housing, and how does that combination, you know, I mean, and I think you're right, Amy. I think the increasing density in the town core is one solution that we should obviously adopt.
Yeah, and the comp plan, it doesn't quite get it done. You know, the King County comp plan, in terms of, I think we really need to come together as a community and envision something holistic. You know, I know that there was wonderful leadership in the community in the mid-90s around the town plan, and really coming together as a community to talk about land use and, you know, and what happens on Vashon and who lives on Vashon and how they live on Vashon. And I think it's about time to do that again, because, you know, the county sort of revising a couple codes on zoning isn't going to get us where we need to go in affordable housing.
Yeah, to be perfectly honest, I was very surprised that when I realized that they were revising the comp plan, because I was involved in that back in the 90s, and it was a major, major effort of the community coming together to work through those plans.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of the comp plan, I just happen to have the beachcomber here, and we're talking about a public meeting on the comp plan. King County Council Committee is reviewing the proposed comp plan, and the meeting is going to be 5:30 p.m. Thursday, April 4th at Vashon Center for the Arts.
Oh,
so
yeah,
if you do want to weigh in on the comp plan.
It's going to be quick, though. I think it's only an hour, and I know they're going to have the right people in the room, but it's definitely, I think, needs to be viewed as a start of the discussion, and getting some information, because the work that needs to be done to actually make significant change. I mean, they really are talking about, you know, all right, instead of 35 feet, we're going to say 3 stories so people can put the HVAC on top. But, you know, that's not a comprehensive plan. That's important code updates that they're making, right? But it's not truly comprehensive for Vashon.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, Bruce.
I was just reading a... As I do, I read the newspapers from the past, a 1977 newspaper, in which the headline on the top of the front page of the Beachcomber is, is it going to be a rich man's island? So the concern in 1977 was that property tax rates were going up significantly because property valuations were going up. Sounds familiar?
Yeah, indeed.
So, It's really interesting to think, and Amy, for what you're working with, it's the very first sort of comprehensive plan for Vashon was the Jigsaw plan back in the 1960s. And it really came out of a group of basically new professionals who had moved to the island in the 1950s, who sort of looked at the island and said, wait a minute, we're growing, but we're just growing like Topsy. We don't have any plan. We don't have any sort of sense of what we want to be or why we want to be that. And so that began a whole series of plans, a jigsaw plan and comprehensive plans and up to what we're dealing with today. And at each of those times, what today we would talk about as gentrification is a central issue. And very few people talk about it in those terms, but except now. And it's very interesting how rapidly the island has gentrified since the 1970s. And that's going to be the core of that discussion about how much land do we set aside? And you're right, Kevin, it really is a land use issue. How much land is set aside for parks and natural areas and preserves, and how much land is buildable, and how is it buildable, and how much land in the town core do we reserve for denser housing than we have right now? And Amy, I'm glad you're at the forefront of that discussion, because it's going to determine where we go in the next 10, 20 years.
I would say I love being a part of it, and just a real tip of the hat to the community council and, you know, Morgan and Art and Dave and, you know, Kim Goforth, man, she is just a wonder of a resource for us to have. A lot of folks involved in taking the lead on that affordable housing, and it is definitely ready for a next iteration of discussion.
Add the name Terry into that list
Absolutely.
And it's great to, again, to drive up into town from the south end where I live and see the housing going in at 188th, I believe. So not sure when that's actually going to have open doors, but nice to see it's coming to completion.
You know, the only thing, again, that comes to mind when you see some of these developments out around the east side in Seattle or that around Puyallup, there's some huge developments there. You think about what that density is going to do to the infrastructure of the roads and whatever accessing that. Mm-hmm. And that does bring about a question.
I lived there for 7 years, my foray outside of King County, and I'm glad to be back in King County. I've called it like rolling out the housing carpet, you know, from South Hill to Yelm.
Yeah.
There's really nothing much in there to slow you down. Yeah. You pay the price for that.
Yeah. The traffic is horrendous at that point, is it not?
It is, yeah. And some friends of mine in Skagit went upriver to talk to people about developers buying up farmland and creating, you know, housing developments and just checking in with people about how they felt about that. And not surprisingly, people from all across the political spectrum were like, yeah, this is a problem.
It is a problem. And unfortunately, it's one of those that have to be addressed in multiple ways, you know, just the housing itself.
We need the housing. We need workforce housing here. You know, if you want to get your mail delivered, if you want to go to the grocery store, you know, if you want your kids to have teachers in school, you know, the collapsing enrollment is a big deal for our school, you know, and we're going to have to find a way through.
Exactly. I've told this story before, but I have to tell it really quickly. I have a friend who lives in Spain. He's a Spaniard, obviously. And he was here visiting. And this was back when I was a park commissioner. And so I was driving him and his wife around the island and showing him this park and that park. And we were talking about parks. And finally, he looks at me and he goes, Truman, why do you have parks? And I tried to explain, well, you know, they're public, you know, so that people, he said, but Truman, why do you have parks? And so I tried to explain further and further. And finally, I'm looking like, what? You know, he goes, Truman, you live in a park. it's like the whole island is a park.
Yes.
You know
what I mean? Yes.
Come on, you don't need all that. Mm-hmm. And speaking of parks, what do you guys think about a dog park? I mean, I know there's a big group that wants a dog park. What's your... It's kind of a controversial subject.
Yeah. Are we going to be talking about A-frames on the sidewalk next? Right. Now we're getting hot button here.
Yeah, that's what I wondered. You know, what do you guys think about that, Bruce? How about historically?
Well, it's fascinating. And a little spoiler alert: in the It's Your History in a couple of weeks, there's going to be an entry about in the early 1970s. there were big attempts to eliminate wild dogs on the island because wild dogs were attacking sheep, attacking livestock. You know, the sheriffs were actually out hunting wild dogs, particularly on the west side. And in 50 years, we've gone from hunting wild dogs to having parks for dogs. So it says something about that.
But does it refer to that gentrification we were talking about earlier?
I think so.
Well, I remember growing up here, you know, our dogs, we had outside dogs, and they would wander as they would wander. You know, we had a pack of them. We had like five dogs, and they would wander around like a pack. And every once in a while, you know, they would disappear for a day or two and come back home. And every once in a while, we'd get a call from someone, you know, like on Maury Island. You know, like, I got your dogs. Like, you got to come get them, you know, kind of deal. But that's truly, you know, in the 80s when I was growing up, Can you imagine
Oof.
Now?
No. Not going to happen.
Yeah. So dog park, that's a tough one.
Yeah, they've looked at a number of locations. And I guess part of the issue is cleaning up after your dogs and liabilities involved with, you know.
It's rough on the site. It's very rough on the site.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I know that also the I live just south of where the new acquisition by King County is, just south of the airstrip, old airstrip down at Sestrap's place.
Yeah, Wax Orchard.
And so I drive past the area where they have the sheepdog trials. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is now one of the items on the list for the dog park. The neighbors are like, we need to really be consulted about this.
It is
right?
off the list so now.
It is off.
It
okay,
is officially DQ'd.
I had not heard that. Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
I was going to say the pitchforks and torches are going to be coming out any moment now. I can just see it happening.
Well, I'm really quite intrigued by the notion of the sight lines that people have come to admire on the island, and there's so many of them, and that's a lot of why people live here. Is the place is beautiful. So.
I think there's a big open space at the dump, like when you walk around on those trails.
there you go.
And I don't know, there might be some don't dig deep. You know,
you definitely want to dig deep there.
Do not disturb the waters.
Yeah.
But you know, maybe there are some spaces that are already not quite the aesthetically
and desirable, as
yes,
it were,
as wax as the Wax Orchard,
former gravel pit kind of places that
that's
trails.
That's a thought. That's a thought. We'll think about that. Okay.
We do have de facto dog parks on Vashon Island, KVI Beach being one of them. And almost any of the trails, as you walk the trails, there's always people with dogs on them. Island Center Forest, Maury Island, Natural Area, Marine Park, all over the island. And it is that sense of, how do you control dogs? Do you want dogs in all the parks, under control or off leash?
Right.
I think what people are really talking about with a dog park is an off-leash park.
That is it, exactly. Mm-hmm. And as long as you're on the trails and you have them on leash, you're not going to, they aren't going to jump on a bicyclist or a horse person, riding through. So it's a little.
And as long as you have a plastic bag with you.
Exactly. To carry out any detritus that's left over. I agree. Okay, next item on my list, the Mukai, Friends of Mukai, are having their annual haiku contest. And I had on Kay Lange this morning at on the Morning Scramble, and she was talking about that. Pretty interesting. It's going to be running from April 1st through the 14th. They are going to accept one entry per person this year. Previously, they had three entries per person. And she said last year they had 550 entries. And so this year they're going to try and tone it down just a little bit and have one entry each.
That's a lot of calligraphy going on there.
Well, what she said was that, and they're not going to post all of them this year. What they're going to do is take, they have Ann Spires is going to be one of the, or is the judge, I guess. And she will pick five candidates, and those will be displayed around the garden.
Oh, only five?
Five from each each entry.
Yes.
And there are four categories. Okay. Do you know, Bruce? Yes. It's four or five categories.
There's five categories.
I think so,
there's a young person's category. There's a nature category.
Yeah.
There's a heritage category. Right. I think there's four or five.
And there's two young people, one younger than 13, one younger than 18, I believe. So So that's, but what a great, great thing. So, you know, 3 years ago, by the way, in 3 days, that'll be March 29th, is the third anniversary of Craig and my adventure into the woods in our airplane. And when I returned from that, I think we crashed on a Sunday, and I think the following Tuesday we were back on the air with Brown briefly. I mean, we got right back on the horse, and it was when the Haiku Festival was starting.
Oh, cool!
Wow.
And we had somebody that came and they said, "Okay, you all have to write a haiku." And I think it was Bruce. Was you or were you the one that wrote the limerick instead of the haiku? Somebody, one of us wrote a limerick. I don't remember who it was.
I have a great crossover idea. Let's write haikus on paper airplanes and throw them into trees.
Oh, that is a great idea.
Or limericks, whatever you want. You can write whatever you want.
It could be a limerick if you want.
On paper airplane and just throw it
into
the
tree. That's a tradition now.
Well, I was wondering, you must have, Truman, you and Craig, put your heads together on a haiku to commemorate the treetop. Do I remember
well,
that right?
Gosh, I'm funny that you should ask. You should mention
well,
that.
The thing that comes to mind for me is how many syllables are in, yeah!
Yeah. Yeah, well, there are several, actually.
Okay, just, you know, because it's important in a haiku.
Well, it's like, oh, you know.
Yeah, let's not get into those seven words there.
Exactly. All right, so when we got back, the whoever it was that we had on said we all had to write a haiku. I'd never written a haiku in my life, so. But I wrote one during the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I remember that.
And gosh, you know, I'm going to have to read it, so here it is. In a valley choked with trees, a sputtering engine falters. Skill and luck save lives.
Nice.
How's that, huh?
Sweet.
Not bad. Not bad.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, but
haiku
anyway.
is a great format.
I love that.
Yeah. It's so accessible, but it's amazing how powerful it can be.
How much you can get out of just those few stanzas. Yeah, I agree. It's I got totally into it. I wrote a whole page of them, you know, and it's kind of makes me think about those things. Are you guys gonna submit this year?
Mm-hmm. I think I might. I'm getting Bruce. I see.
Yeah, Bruce, you're gonna go for it. Well, I think that the competition could get pretty fierce.
So, yeah, right.
I'm looking forward to it. Okay, next up, national news. Okay, so today, the former guy was given a reprieve in his payment of the $454 million. Actually, it was yesterday, of the his $454 million payment. It was reduced to $175 million, and he was given an extra 10 days. Any thoughts on that from the brieflies?
Can you see my shocked face on the radio?
Yeah.
Right. I'm wondering who is
it's
surprised.
It's not very shocked.
No. Yeah, I agree. a little disappointed, I think.
You know, my take on it, too bad Craig's not here to give us.
I was really missing that.
But I think it's, you know, I don't think that's unusual why things are under appeal. You know, if the judgment was a final judgment, no way.
Right.
But while things are under appeal, it's not untypical for, you know, bonds like that to be reduced for a limited time. You know, and of course, it all depends on the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the appeal fails and the judgment stands, then he's going to have to come up with $454 immediately.
Cash. No bond, just cash, right?
But, of course, he just sold Trump Truth or whatever it is, his media site for, what,
$3.8
million.
Yeah, so. Something, yeah.
That's it. $3.8 million.
$3.8 million.
That's it.
That's a pretty good chunk of change.
It is, but, you know, these days... Yeah. 3.8 doesn't go as far as it used to. I don't know how many judgments can you pay off with 3.8? Not too many.
Well, if you're him,
right?
What I've heard is that's money on paper, and there's limited. There's you have to basically stay in, since it's basically like shares in a company. You have to stay in. You can't sell before I think 6 months.
Right.
And some speculation is that as soon as the big guy sells out, it's like everybody else is going to drop those shares like a hot rock because people don't think it's going to really earn much money.
It's not going to fly.
No, that's the speculation I've heard. But,
yeah.
But to the bigger effect, several people, our listeners, may have heard this newscaster talk about that she went out and got a parking ticket. She lives in New York City, and they have this alternate parking thing. You have to move your car to... occasionally, and she didn't get there soon enough or something like that, and got a parking ticket, and there's really no relief for that. You mm-hmm. know, they took her license away, and like you got to pay up, like right now. So this notion that some appellate court's going to come in and save this black woman reporter just doesn't exist in our country for her. Mm-mm. So, yeah, it's frustrating.
Interesting. Of course, now the one I heard about was about the young blonde woman who comes into the bank and takes out a loan for $500,000, and she gives him her Bentley as collateral.
Mm, okay.
And then she leaves on vacation and went to Europe. She came back in a month, paid off the loan, got her car back, and the interest on the loan was X amount of dollars, but was way cheaper than it would have been if she paid to have it parked somewhere.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
Yeah, so, you know, pretty smart thing.
Wow.
All right. Next up, the Security Council. In the UN, a vote was taken on demanding a ceasefire in Gaza and the return of the hostages. And the U.S. this time did not veto, and they did not. In fact, they abstained. And I'm wondering, what do you think of that, and what do you think the result of that will be? Anyone?
I'm kind of wondering if you want the official published answer, or you want us to speculate on what's really happening.
A little of both, yeah.
Well, I heard from the officially published answer that I think the measure did not call out Hamas, and so therefore it did not have all of the content that
Correct.
The U.S. felt was appropriate.
Right.
But then maybe to our speculation about what might be happening in terms of the pressure that the administration's feeling on that issue.
And in my mind, that probably was a pretty good move, because it puts pressure on Israel without committing us to either supporting or not. Mm-hmm. So I think that was probably a pretty astute move on our part. When I first heard that, I thought, what is going on? But I think it was a good move. What about you, Bruce? Do you have an opinion there?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a tightrope. And, you know, I think the abstention, you know, allows the U.S. to do what Kevin talked about. I mean, certainly condemn Hamas, but at the same time, you know, the difficulty and to me, the tightrope that we're walking and all of us are walking is how do you sort of articulate an opposition to what's going on in Gaza with the Israeli military attacks, with a concept of anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism.
Exactly.
And what's happening is those three are being conflated into one, and they're really three separate things.
Right.
And how to navigate through that, I think the American sort of State Department, you know, Biden, the American public is walking that tightrope, because nobody's willing to sit down and have that conversation about how do you distinguish between those three sort of things. And they're not all the same in my mind. But at the same time, they're being conflated to one. So you can't oppose Israel's action in Gaza without being anti-Semitic. You can't mm-hmm. criticize the Israeli government without being
anti-Semitic. Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't. Nobody wants to support Hamas. You know, but at the same time, wow, how do you find a policy that works through that minefield? And that, to me, is a difficult sort of discussion. And nobody's willing to have that discussion at this point.
Yeah. And there's, you know, there's really the public cultural discussion around who we are as Americans and what we have. And, you know, it's so easy these days to look at D.C. and, you know, the circus, some of the folks that just feel like they're clowns in a circus in Congress, and think of D.C. as comprised of, you know, that. But it is not. And when, you know, when you're at the Pentagon or the State Department and you hear from these folks and, you know, everything that's public, there's four dimensions, five layers deep of diplomacy that is going on. And, you know, if you are doing foreign service for the Biden administration, you are one of the smartest people on the planet. You know, like some of the, we talk about the quote unquote deep state, right? And how this is sort of an alleged evil, and the folks who comprise the deep state are some of the most amazing people you will meet. And they are definitely working overtime there, right?
Absolutely.
So yeah, it is. It is hard to say that there's trust in the government, but I do trust our foreign policy, and especially the folks who are doing the foreign policy. But
boots on the ground.
Yeah, the boots on the ground. But as Bruce said, I mean, that is part of sort of larger discussion. How do we have a trusting cultural discussion amongst ourselves as Americans if we don't even trust the government that is generating policy, if we can't look at it and think deeply about it and say, okay, maybe there is a reason and an important reason diplomatically that's leading to a solution for that abstention. You know, if we can't give each other grace, it becomes very difficult.
Yeah. And go ahead, Bruce.
I think, Amy, you're hitting right on the head. What I see as one of the major issues is that sort of demonization of the deep state. I mean, the deep state is what teaches our kids in school, what delivers the mail, what gets the electricity in your house, keeps water flowing. I mean, the deep state, quote, to me, is sort of what governments do. Mm-hmm. And you know, and governments are instituted among people for a purpose. You know, go back to the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. We have a government to do those things. Mm-hmm. And to demonize that government, I think, is a disservice to us all.
It is, yeah. I worked for a speakers bureau in D.C. for kids. You know, it was a summer camp, junior state. And, you know, my job was to line up speakers at the State Department, in Congress, at the Pentagon, and bring the kids in. And so I got to hear from these speakers multiple times each summer. And it's mind-blowing. The expertise, the level of, complexity and the expertise and, you know, what these folks bring to their jobs is awe-inspiring.
Well, you know, to me, to bring it back to even a local level, I remember when I first got elected to the park board, there was that institutional knowledge that was there. I mean, some of those folks that had been on the board for, you know, years, I mean, since its inception practically. And without that knowledge, I mean, if you were to elect all new people without that background, you would have no idea how to make that system work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess in my mind it's this notion that if you criticize government for not working and you're unhappy with your situation, mm-hmm. imagine what your situation would be like with no government whatsoever.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, there's places on this planet right now that are going through that.
Absolutely.
And if you care to pay attention, then it's horrific and it's really awful. And it's happening, in, you know, of course, in multiple places around. So, I'm totally while we can have concerns about how our government operates and I wish it would do better here, this whole notion that it's got to be thrown out is, mm-hmm. in my mind, ill-founded.
Totally. And we have to, I think we have to put a lot of that on the orange guy. For establishing that.
Drain the swamp,
yeah.
quote unquote.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think if they drain it from the top,
mm-hmm. there you go.
You know, that might not be too bad. But when he says I'm going to bring in only the best people, and try and replace some of those folks who know what the heck they're doing, I just mm-hmm. it just blows my mind.
Well, I also wanted to say I share Bruce's frustration. Has expressed more. Capably than mine, but this notion that in this very complex scenario that we're talking about in the Middle East with Israel and Gaza, there's a lot of moving parts, there's a lot of history there, right? And a lot has brought us to this point. But the thing that's frustrating to me is that, you know, any outreach to say I support one organization can easily be interpreted as you're opposing all of the other players,
exactly.
Right? And it's just life is not that simple. And so hopefully people can have more grace, as you mentioned, Amy, with understanding it's complex. And we need to recognize humanity needs to support a lot of the different factors that are there. And hopefully we can arrive at a more peaceful solution.
And personally, I really appreciate Bruce's analysis there of separating those into the three different areas. I mean, where we're putting them all into one. I mean, that was, to me, very clarifying. And I really appreciate that. I hope other people get that same clarity out of that discussion that Bruce brought. So I really appreciate that, guys. So in the end, boy, figuring out a way to get us get them out of this situation, and I really like the idea of building the mobile pier where they're bringing stuff in. that way you don't have to go through Israel or anything else. You just boom, bring it directly in. I thought that was a great idea.
Mm-hmm. What were they called in World War II and the D-Day? There was a name for them.
Oh,
Mulberries.
Yeah.
If I remember right, Mulberries.
Mulberries.
Yeah. I know a little history occasionally. I'll sneak
in on that. I get that. I'm
impressed. Kevin just kind of whipping that out of his back pocket
there. The only thing I know about mulberries was the tree in my grandmother's backyard in West Texas. Okay, so the next item I got on the list here is Ronan McDaniel being hired as a pain consultant by NBC News.
All the uncontroversial topics.
Yeah, just some light stuff, you know. We don't want to get into anything too heavy. What in the world was NBC thinking? I mean... Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on that, guys?
What sells? They're thinking about ads and viewership.
Why? It must be.
I first got an email probably now 5 days ago, and it was express your outrage. And I thought, it's a hiring decision. And then I had a chance to listen to people convey the history of what Ms. McDaniel has
done.
Has supported, yeah. And I really champion the news coverage that doesn't platform liars, right? And doesn't platform propaganda, which is really, we call it disinformation, but I think that's the kind word for what it really is propaganda. Yeah. And the notion that news agencies are willing to platform a propagandist is kind of outrageous in my mind. Other than to point out that this is not how it should be done. So I haven't written that letter yet, but I'm much more compelled now to say NBC. No, wrong answer.
Wrong answer. Go ahead, Bruce.
Oh, it seems to me, the Edward R. Murrow's and Walter Cronkite's have to be turning over in their graves. News has always been a business, but like newspapers and radio and television, it was a business with ethics and with a code of practices. And what we see is drifting away from that into, like Amy said, it's all about the bottom line. It's all about selling ads. And it's sort of like, wait a minute. I mean, that's a component of it. But there's another component that's equally significant, and that's that sort of legitimacy of the news. Mm-hmm. And if we lose that, then where do you go? And we see that happening around us all the time.
And Bruce, we've had this discussion in the past about the fact that how our news is, how we're getting our news these days. You know, like you said, the newspapers used to have a board that reviewed, everything that was, and they tried to keep it as non-political or truthful as they could. And with the advent of the internet, it's just the Wild West out there. And we've talked about, again, how do we regulate that? How do we deal with it?
Yeah, and it's going back to, Brian Brown, our guiding light here to a certain extent, he started working at Time Magazine as a fact checker.
Yeah.
I think most people don't know what a fact checker is anymore.
A fact checker before the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. newspapers, magazines, news outlets, they would have a whole team of fact checkers who would basically be researching, is this true or not?
Yeah.
Before it ever went out on broadcast. And they make errors like anybody makes errors. But at the same time, that was their job. You go to any major newspaper, or any major, sort of news outlet, magazine right now, there's a handful of fact checkers when there used to be hundreds. So, that's the dilemma.
Of course, the job was more difficult then because they didn't have the internet to research,
So things that I've read recently about this, one of them is the historical perspective about, journalism has been here before, right? And the yellow journalism and things like that. And they didn't talk about how that journalistic history had been put behind us to welcome in the Cronkites. I don't know, Bruce, if you can elaborate or give us some insight into how that happened, and is there a hope for our future in terms of more sort of equitable news reporting?
The Federal Communications Commission, mm-hmm. in part, was one of those progressive sort of era, you know, agencies that's formed to sort of regulate food, regulate drugs, regulate communications. I mean, that sense that there needs to be an umpire. Mm-hmm. And we've moved away from that. And part of that is the distrust in government, you know, that Amy and you guys have been talking about. But at the same time, you know, to have a level playing field and to have a fair game, you need to have umpires. It's not a free-for-all. Mm-hmm. And what we've seen is particularly since the Reagan Revolution, is a move away from having those kind of umpires on the field. And it has become a free-for-all. Well, and that doesn't serve anybody.
No, I just saw this interview with Jim Jordan, G-Y-M Jordan, mm-hmm. not J-I-M.
Oh, him.
Yeah. And he was going on about, you know, about the Biden administration trying to stifle free the First Amendment, you know. And I'm going, you don't yell fire in a theater, you know. We're back to that. And it's like there's got to be something. And I mean, I understand it's really a slippery slope. You've got to be very careful of how you regulate this stuff. And I don't think we've got the answer yet. I mean, not even close. But can we rely on the past? I mean, look back to that and see what they did with the papers and the news and the radio, or what do we do? You know, I'm at a loss personally. Anybody else?
To me, it's tough because what you've seen, and we've talked about this before, but with the introduction of postmodernism mm-hmm. as an intellectual tradition in the 1990s, mm-hmm. Which essentially questions all authority, you know, that is an intellectual tradition has sort of worked its way into the popular culture and has sort of Topsy-like grown, you know, out of control. And so, you know, there is that sort of, you know, going back to the nature of scientific revolutions and those kind of things that say, hey, you know, even science is culturally sort of determined. You know, language is culturally determined. Meanings are culturally determined. And there's a truth to that, but it's also not necessarily an advocacy of rejecting all truth.
Hmm.
Yeah. And it's really the dilemma of modern society, and it's intensified by AI. You see all the things that are going on with deep fakes right now. With AI, it just has intensified. And at some point, I think we need to have another progressive era where we step in and as a nation agree that we're going to regulate these kind of things. We're going to regulate the internet. We're going to regulate Twitter. We're going to regulate, you know, news outlets, not in the sense of censorship, but in terms of what's acceptable. And that's a difficult one.
Yeah. I mean, who's going to determine that? You know, that's the question.
Who's going to determine that? Right.
Right. Yeah. Well, we have to come back to, we had a decided version of the truth that certain people got to decide. Right. And yeah, I mean, the hilarity, I guess, or the irony around postmodernism, right, is it's designed to be sort of this rigorous academic exercise around examining, you know, bias and the quote unquote truth that has been sort of co-opted by propagandists, right, that their ultimate thing is to get you to trust nothing except them. Right. And so kind of that co-opting by the right. But, you know, I think we're sort of litigating our original sins now, right? And that is a tough time when we are questioning sort of what we had all culturally, quote, all, let me put all in quotation marks, shared in quotation marks, right? These sort of truths that we had shared and they really weren't shared by enough folks. And now we're trying to litigate that. And it's a very, very difficult process. And we don't have very good umpires or leadership in that process right now. But I have hope on the small scale. I have hope on the community small scale.
Well, I think you're right, Amy, that it has to start on the small scale. You know, we have to start believing, he can get it. We have to start believing in ourselves, in our small circles. And if we start believing in that, then maybe it'll progress out to the next layer. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, I mean, when you have these election deniers and these folks who are, it really makes me nervous for the 2024 mm-hmm. election. I mean, what are we going to do when these guys say, oh, well, we don't believe that we lost? You know, well, what? I mean, like you said, this was a shared reality that we all shared, that we believed that our systems were working. Well, I guess
another shout out for Democracy in Chains, if you will, the book that goes into the details of the movement that is actually trying to do, Truman, what you just said, is to reduce the importance of democracy in our country.
Right.
And yeah, Democracy in Chains, worth reading.
Wow, but it just blows me away. I saw last night they had the head of elections, I think it was from Arizona, and. Boy, he was being really adamant about we have all of our systems in place, and boy, it's going to be as good as it can be.
Yeah. Fuentes, if I remember right.
I believe it's
his name. I know when in the 2020 election, I think it was, might have been 22, we were working pretty hard to advocate supporting secretaries of state, attorney generals in those really key states that are having a little trouble counting the vote.
Well, they had
so
you know,
really
they had
thrilled that he made it, and Katie Hobbs stepped up into governor. So yeah, it's really nice to see those trends.
Well, and you've got when they had armed people outside the you know, the where the votes were being counted. I mean, come on, gee whiz.
It's, yeah.
All right, so let's get to one last topic, a little lighter topic. And that is, how about them Iowa Hawkeyes?
Woohoo!
Isn't that something? Boy, Caitlin Clark.
I watched 4 games. It was great. I was with a friend. I was at Eagles for a while and then up at Sports and talking with a friend about, you know, hey, Amy, when was the last time you watched 4 different women's tournament games at one time?
Exactly.
You know, 3 or 4. And I was like, never.
Never.
You know, like just, yeah, Caitlin Clark. And I was so, I all loved the Zags and I'm glad Craig's not here, but I was so bummed to see Utah lose because Alyssa Peely is like, I love her. She is a brick house. Yeah. I love watching her move on the court. She's a 5-sport athlete. She just changes, I think, the face of what we think about for athletes and who an athlete is. And so I'm bummed not to see her move forward in the tournament. Yeah. But
well, I'll tell you, and I've said this many times before, I so enjoy watching women's basketball because it's real basketball. Mm-hmm. I mean, men's professional basketball has turned into a contact sport.
It is. It's getting rough.
Yeah, you get in there and you fight like everything, and you foul and you double dribble and you don't get called for it. And, you know, I mean, it's just amazing to me. And you watch these women. Well, except that Caitlin did get clocked the other day. I think she was almost knocked out. She was hit so hard. But, you know, this is real basketball.
It is.
It's really fun to watch.
Yeah, I'm starting to say look out for USC, which, you know, fight on. I love the Trojans. But it was interesting. I kind of felt like that Iowa game was a little messy last night.
A little bit.
It was a little messy. And then you watched, you know, the USC game, and they look like professional basketball players on that court.
Yeah. Well, and soon Caitlin will be, I guess, huh?
That's right.
Is she going to get drafted? Well, folks, we're getting up to the end of the show here. And, boy, thank you guys all for keeping me on the straight and level here.
Oh, absolutely.
I had to come up with some topics that I had hoped would generate some interest. So, Bruce, you're hosting next week? Is that correct?
I am, and I can't remember who I'm hosting.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Quick, check the website.
Right. All right, we'll get it in the paper for sure.
While we're waiting, a shout out to my sister. Happy birthday, Karen, and enjoy your time in the Virgin Islands where she's been living for the last about 40 years.
Oh, my gosh, good for her. How cool. All right, folks, we will see you all next week here on the Voice of Vashon for the Brown Briefly. So, g'day.
Have fun.